Our first conversation with Eric introduces Wraparound as a family-driven and what I and others call youth-driven way of working, not just a package of services. Eric walks through the values that organize the process, family voice and choice. Oh, it's family and youth voice, okay. Eric walks through the values that organize the process, family and youth voice and choice, team-based planning, natural supports, collaboration, cultural responsiveness, a strengths-based focus, persistence, and a focus on outcomes. The starting point is a young person and their family's own definition of a better life. Professionals bring their own expertise, but they should not arrive with a plan already decided. They need to listen to the young person, to the family, and to the people who know the young person and the family well, both to understand what they are working towards and to make sure that supports actually fit the setting where a young person lives, learns, and works. Our conversations here make practical the implications of the science of learning and development that we discussed in episode 4, that young people are shaped across multiple relationships and settings and cannot be understood only through behavior. This point also connects directly to what Ray Saldanha described as supports that feel cohesive rather than fragmented. In Wraparound, coherence does not come from asking a family to comply with several separate treatment plans. It comes from building one integrated plan around the family and youth's priorities with the professionals and systems involved in shared responsibility for that plan. Eric draws one more distinction that matters. Children and families are not cases to be managed. Wraparound is an intensive iterative process grounded in the family and youth's own context and a process that supports family and youth agency. Wraparound coordinated prepares people to participate, helps the family and youth build a team of professional and natural supports, translates between professional languages, and revises the plan whenever it stops producing results. Our conversation with Eric continues by addressing a distinction that often gets blurred. Full wraparound requires a real infrastructure to support high-quality practice. Our next conversation with Eric draws a distinction that often gets ignored in practice. Effective wraparound requires strong infrastructure to support high-quality practice. A system should not claim to provide wraparound just because it assigns a coordinator or holds a meeting. Eric walks us through the infrastructure effective wraparound needs: systems of care, interagency agreements, flexible financing, data systems, workforce preparation and support, supervision, and a service array broad enough to respond to individual needs, with implementation assessed rather than assumed, and family and youth's perceptions treated as essential evidence. Our conversation here extends Catherine Bradshaw's operating system idea. Individual practitioners can absorb wraparound principles, but effective wraparound depends on a surrounding system that enables the practitioners to be effective by giving them the time, authority, and flexible resources to build one plan around one child and family, rather than to manage several plans around separate agency boundaries. Infrastructure is also an equity issue. Families with the greatest needs are often asked to navigate the most fragmented systems, and when agencies protect their own boundaries, the burdens of coordinating falls on the family. Building system capacity in that light is not administrative housekeeping. It is part of making services more humane, effective, fair, and equitable. Let's follow that conversation further, because conditions are 49.999% of the game when connected to the values, which may be 51.1. And it's not enough to want good things. One has to create the conditions to enable those good things to happen. And you started to mention that earlier when you talked about the braided funding project a little. But if you want to now elaborate further from what you have seen, both through your empirical research, but also through the time you have spent listening to people who are doing this work on the ground, what are the array of conditions that have to be adapted to individual contexts and to individual young people and families in those individual contexts at individual moments in their life space? But at the same time, what are those conditions?
Yeah, if you just think about radiating outward from that vision of a family being supported to be able to wrap the help that they need around themselves, right? Not having it done for them, but done with them and cheered on by a really skilled care coordinator who truly can wave the magic wand. So now we've talked about Pat Miles, we've talked about John Vandenberg, and there's Carl Dennis. He always told the story of really what you have to have is an individual who, no matter how many ways in which the parent has been basically screwed over by systems, you can actually can convince them, because it's not disingenuous, that you can say, what would it take for you to be able to care for your child, for you to be able to have this vision for the future that you just described? I've got a magic wand and I'm going to wave it, right? One accountable care coordinator in place for you, who can truly engage and sincerely say that, right? There are care coordinators out there who work in systems that can't say that, and the family gets it. But when a care coordinator can truly feel like they are supervised by someone who believes that's true, the leadership of their organization believes that they've got the resources and the green light to actually make that true, and the system across all of the sectors, child welfare, education, behavioral health, juvenile justice, are working together to bring up organizations who have supervisors and managers who've employed care coordinators who really feel that is true. That's where you can actually make this happen. And that's threading a lot of needles, but we do know that it's possible. We've seen it happen in the monographs that have been produced and the case studies. That's why Wraparound Milwaukee got a Kennedy School for Government, right? They brought hundreds of kids back from institutional care. That's why John Vandenberg wrote about the Alaska Youth Initiative, where they brought dozens of kids back to Alaska. And so, if you're going to have a care coordinator, that one accountable person who can sincerely say, I can wave a magic wand, make the things that you say need to happen for you happen, that's going to require some real wonky systems level things. You need to have a collaborative entity at the state or the local level that brings those different systems together. They all agree that we're going to pool our funds for our most complex needs kids, because 70% of kids in child welfare have got complex behavioral health needs. 80% of kids in juvenile justice do, right? Special ed, all of these systems blending their funding, putting it into an organization that's responsible, like I said, for doing whatever it takes. They can sincerely say, we can wave a magic wand because we've got a capitated rate or a case rate, wonky stuff. The state has got a Medicaid waiver that allows you to legally pool those funds, give it to an organization that says, okay, care coordinator, here's your blank checkbook. If the young person needs a mentor, as Carl's example would be, the mother says, I can't even get this kid out of bed in the morning. That's why he's failing in school. I got to go to work at 6 a.m. and work a double shift. He's not getting out of bed. Who am I going to get? Who? You would have to give me someone who's going to get him out of bed. And Carl waves the magic wand and says, okay, I'm going to go to the high school. I know the football coach. Your kid likes football and he wishes he was on the football team. He looks up to the football players. So I'm going to pay one of the football players $20 an hour for 2 hours before school to come over, get your kid out of bed, hang out with him on the way to school, make sure he gets to school. That's $40 a day. How much would that cost if that was a therapist? But that's what you need. Now, if you want that to happen, if you want a team around the family that's coming up with those creative ideas, a care coordinator who goes and follows through, you've got to have wonky things like at the state level, a governor's cabinet of all of the systems and the leaders agreeing to pool their funds, to have one single door through which families go through no matter what eligibility rules are, no matter what system is responsible for the kid. We've got one organization in every region, like they do in New Jersey, that employs people who can wave that magic wand and go buy a football player who's like, yeah, I would do that. That sounds great. I got to hit the weight room anyway. Maybe I'll take him to the weight room with me. Shoot, now this kid is all worn out. He's coming home like having had a whole bunch of exercise. He hung out with a cool guy. Wow, it's really amazing. He comes home all exhausted. He's been going to school because at the end of the day, he gets to go to the weight room with this guy. And next thing, this mother is saying, I don't know what the heck happened. He's going to school. He comes home. He's happy. He's not like yelling at his siblings. He's not aggressing against me. It's a miracle. Those things happen because very, very complex things happen at the system level that filter down to the practice level. And then there's a lot of other examples of that, right? So you got the single door through which families know how to get help. You got single organizations responsible for these families. Each one of the care coordinators has the ability to buy help, not just a certain set of services that are who's the next therapist in line. We're going to find a therapist that's actually meets the needs of this family. We're going to go outside our own organization and find the right person. That only happens if you invest in an organization that is held responsible for outcomes as opposed to the bottom line of revenue. If you just make wraparound a service that a community mental health center does, they're just going to say, okay, who's up next? They're not going to ask, how do we get the best outcomes? They're just going to say, oh, he's got an open slot on his schedule. So even though his specialty is young kids and who have oppositional defiant disorder, and this is a teenager who is running away and using substances, but that's the therapist who's available. That's what typically happens. You got to change the system in order for that kind of individualized creative care to happen.
I remember for a different monograph spending a lot of time interviewing people from wraparound Milwaukee. And I want to share for your comment two of many takeaways. But one takeaway was to the question of how do you get people to start responding to this? And they said, if you really have enough money to really allocate and people know that the only way they're going to be able to get that money and access that money is by doing it this way, they will start to really consider maybe doing it. But then the issue is how do you make sure that they do it well, which is one of the things wraparound Milwaukee did in lots of different ways. Let me just and go to the other point that I think is so important in the wraparound Milwaukee model that I remember. And my research there was in the first decade of the century, was the ability of families and youth to fire clinicians, a critical piece, because then if I go to your example and I end up having the guy who might be very good for something I don't need, but not meeting my need, I can get rid of that guy immediately. And on the other hand, he may know that he might want to either find somebody else or change his behavior immediately.
And again, that's part of the wraparound model that we train and coach at the National Wraparound Implementation Center, is that you are asking very frequently very simple questions of the family that are about whether or not you're getting closer to the two or three biggest underlying needs that you identified that your plan of care is addressing. Okay, you've got two big needs, right? Your son needs to feel as though they're important and they belong. We're not talking about my son needs to go to therapy. We're not talking about my son needs to go to school. It's I need to feel like I belong And I need to feel comfortable in my own skin in the different places that I go, my school, my home, whatever. All right, let's ask whether or not this young person is actually getting closer to that kind of get having that need met. And this kid continues to be skipping school, continues to be really frustrated, crying, upset, lashing out at his parents because of the frustration of just feeling like they don't fit in. They have not had a plan that is working to make that happen. That's the central thing, is that if that progress towards getting those deep needs is not getting met, you got to change the plan. And that's the accountability that a real wraparound organization and wraparound system of care has. For each family, are we making progress towards our vision for a better future? If it's no or maybe not, you've got to change things up, and it's completely understood. That's the philosophy of our care, or our philosophy of care is families don't fail, plans fail, right? People don't fail, plans fail. We got to change the plan, and it's based on data. And then that goes out to the organization as well. We are a care management entity. We're serving Union County, New Jersey, right? They have a care management entity for every one of their counties. We are keeping only 75% of our kiddos in the community, whereas the average statewide is 90%. We know that well-functioning wraparound can keep 85, 90% of even the toughest kids in the community, the kids who are coming back from institutions who otherwise would have to go to one. We know that when wraparound's done well, we can keep 90% of our kiddos with their families and in their community. If you as an organization are not achieving that, and that's the expectation, same thing as with an individual family. We got to change what we're doing. What Let's look really hard at ourselves. That's what we're accountable to. We're not just counting service units. We're held accountable to making these outcomes that we're expected to achieve happen. Families are satisfied, families are making progress, and we're keeping kids at home in school and out of trouble.
And if I am right, what has to happen at different system levels is that the different partners with a sense of shared accountability for the results have to continue to look at the data for continuous improvement. So it's not that you have to do something better to make it work because this is a mental health issue or an educational issue, but this is our common challenge, and we have to find ways that we do it, even knowing that people will work in their own area of specialty.
Absolutely. That was name checking some other folks up in Michigan. Jim Watring and Kay Hodges pioneered using data and having data parties among the different providers. And we really try to emulate that. We've got this wonderful pilot project in California. Department of Social Services have wraparound after supports their aftercare planning. And they invited us to help 10 organizations. Wonderful organizations among the hundreds in California who volunteered to collect data and get together in a room and look at their data together. It took 2 years to get the data, but these folks hung with it. And we show how certain organizations are getting to meaningfully better fidelity to the wraparound principles that you started out with, meaningfully better outcomes for families. And that's when peers learn from peers. They say, how did you do that? It's like, next learning community will show you one of the tricks we do. They take those fidelity assessments that they do with each one of their care coordinators, and they sit down and they review it in depth, and they coach based on it. And they is one strategy. Another strategy is they're proactively looking at every single family's data on whether or not they're making progress towards needs. And that's how they do supervision. It's directive supervision. It's not crisis of the week supervision. It's you've got 10 families that you're working with as a care coordinator. What's the one or two that I see in these data that are not making progress? That's the only thing we're going to talk about is what needs to change about the plans for those families. And care coordinators, they're human. They don't like to have their failure, quote unquote, shown off, right? So in a typical supervision situation, as these folks from that one organization in California described, they would immediately go to spending half an hour talking about this one kid and how they behaved in a team meeting, even though that family is doing great. They're making progress toward their goals. The kid is doing better in school, but They refer back to this one crazy crisis that happened in a team meeting. Meanwhile, you've got these families that are really struggling and could be on the brink of an out-of-home placement that they're not bringing up, that the data is bringing up. All of these kinds of lessons learned, directive supervision, using that data-driven coaching, came out in these interactions among these folks. And I think it's contagious. They hear from one another about how they're making the principles happen using data and coaching and good supervision. And I don't know, it's a really fun thing to do, is to use data at all those different levels and learn different tricks about how to make it actually useful and helpful to making practice better.
In some subsequent episodes, including one that will be posted after this one, we start talking about AI, both in terms of what it could do and what it couldn't do. It would seem to me that there are ways of using AI to enable this process, to better and more quickly align the data and make it more accessible and more actionable. And I'm not talking about to supplant human beings and relationships and to come up with models that are pasty. Do you agree? And I welcome your disagreement as well about the potential of AI to help better harvest and to make data actionable.
Yeah, it's such a tough conversation because I do think that AI is ruinous environmentally. I don't think that we need to ask how we do no harm first. And yet, at the same time, there are applications of it that can be incredibly useful for generating insights. Some of the examples that we're just beginning to dip our toe in, one, because we're not trained on these things, and academics are always the last folks to actually figure out how to embrace new technology, ironically. But we, at this point now at the National Wraparound Implementation Center, we have literally tens of thousands of families' worth of data on fidelity, satisfaction, and outcomes that are then associated with hundreds of different organizations in dozens of, well, at least a dozen states. Now, how would you ever figure out how to filter where the lessons of what correlates with what out of all of those literally millions, if not billions, of triads, dyads, all of the different associations that are within that data set? So at a big level, that's something that we're looking at. At a smaller level, just the basic enterprise of supporting the workforce to do practice that lives up to those principles we talked about could be something that AI plays a role in. We got a couple folks who are looking into this. So all of that documentation that wraparound or other service models generate, but wraparound, that's a lot of documentation, sometimes to a fault, right? You have your plan of care, you have your crisis plan, you've got your strengths, needs, culture discovery, inventories, and so forth. How well is a facilitator actually making those principles happen for a family as reflected in that documentation? That's something that takes our coaches hours and hours to go through in providing coaching to a new care coordinator, or maybe an experienced care coordinator for that matter. I think large language models is actually analyzing all of those, again, thousands of pieces of information that are generated from the practice of helping families has potential to streamline the coaching and supervision process for practitioners, right? And it just, again, just like so many of these things we've been talking about, it's just the layers of the onion. We can better provide feedback to one practitioner. A supervisor can better ask which of its of their practitioners seem to meaningfully be doing better than others, and how do we learn from them? The organization can be looking at their pattern of outcomes and see, compared to other sites, what is it that we could improve on? What are some of the things here that might be insights for improvement? I think that's where we might be able to use AI. We just haven't really delved into it so much yet that we do have some folks who are beginning to.
There's a